It's the yahrzeit of the Rebbetzin Chaya Mushke, that's the Rebbe's wife. And it's a special day for us as Hasidim. I have to first say that, you know, when you give a tribute and you try to remember someone, you're almost saying that you are fit to speak of the person, that you can, you know, properly, you know, honor them, or that you really have an understanding. So in the onset, I have to say that we really have no idea, really, when we talk about the Rebbetzin, or we talk about these holy tzaddikim or tzidkoniyus, righteous women, we don't have really the right to pretend like that we have mastered the right words and the right ideas about these people, about these righteous, great people, because they are way, way, way beyond our capacity. But at the same time, we also don't have the right to ignore, and not to mention the day of Chav Beis Shvat, the Yahrzeit, which was something which was very dear to the Rebbe. And the Rebbetzin was with the Rebbe for most of her lifetime. And they went through, together with the Rebbe, they went through a lot of struggles. And they narrowly escaped Europe during the times of war. And the Rebbetzin stood by the Rebbe's side. You know the story in the Gemara about Rabbi Akiva. He went to the yeshiva to study Torah, and he got permission from his wife. First of all, that whole shidduch was kind of a difficult one, because Rachel, the wife of Rabbi Akiva, she came from a very distinguished family, a wealthy family. Rabbi Akiva, he was a simple, he was an orphan, he didn't have much, and on top of that, he wasn't very learned. And they knew each other, and I guess today they would say they fell in love, but they, and the father threatened his daughter that if you marry Rabbi Akiva, of which he thought that, you know, he was a bum, you know, he said, if you marry, I'm going to write you out of any of the inheritance and any of the connection to the family. But she was able to see through the superficial layer in which Rabbi Akiva looked like a simple peasant, and she was able to see the soul and the potential of this great Rabbi, great tzaddik, and basically the one who gave us all of the oral Torah, Kulu Alibe de Rabbi Akiva. We know that all of our learning, all of the rabbis go according and follow Rabbi Akiva. He raised all the students. So his wife allowed him, he got permission for him to go to yeshiva so that he can excel, which he was very successful. But he had to get permission for his wife. And she did. And then one time when he finally, after 12 years, when he came back and he saw, you know, the hardship that his wife had, there was nobody home, a breadwinner, and all the difficulties she was going through. And he was about, and he overheard a neighbor was saying to her, look at your husband. How could he do something like this, leave you alone, and you're all by yourself? How could he do this? And she said, look, if he's learning Torah and he's raising students and he's being successful, I'm ready to suffer this loneliness for another 12 years as long as he continues to study. And he went and he left. He never came. He left. He heard that conversation. And then after 24 years, he comes back. And the whole city came out to greet Rabbi Akiva, because he was the major, the main sage at that time. Everybody was, it was an honor. And also amongst the people came his father-in-law. Didn't know it was Rabbi Akiva. He came to complain about his son-in-law, that he left his wife, he left his daughter, nowhere to be found. And he wants Rabbi Akiva to do something about it, about his daughter's situation. And also amongst the group over there was also his wife. She was there too. The poor widow, or thinking she was like a widow. She had a husband, but he wasn't there. So, anyways, Rabbi Akiva recognizes his wife amongst the crowd and the people, and she came over to Rabbi Akiva, trying to come to Rabbi Akiva to talk to him, get his attention. But the people over there were trying to push her away from Rabbi Akiva because a woman is coming to her. And Rabbi Akiva says, I want you to know that all of my learning on all of your learning is actually belongs to her, because it was her zechus, the fact that she allowed and she encouraged and she was there all these years going through all the difficulties. All of my Torah, all of your Torah is her Torah, because she is the one that is responsible. To a certain degree, yes, go ahead. We can say the same thing is about the Rebbetzin, even though we see, just like by Rabbi Akiva, people saw Rabbi Akiva's greatness, but they didn't appreciate at the time that behind Rabbi Akiva stands his wife, who gave up everything so that Rabbi Akiva could do his thing and grow and become the mentor of the entire Jewish people. The same thing could be said about the Rebbetzin, that all the zechusim and all the tremendous work, accomplishments, changing the landscape of the world that the Rebbe accomplished is all in the zechus. As the Gemara says, Shalonu v'shalochem shalohu. Everything that we have today, what the Rebbe was able to accomplish, was in the merit of the Rebbetzin. It was the merit of the Rebbetzin Chaya Mushka. She was a private person, and she stood away from the spotlight, from the limelight. She lived in complete obscurity without going out, without showing herself, but she was there for the Rebbe, and she supported the Rebbe, and she allowed for the Rebbe. She would wait while the Rebbe would give talks in 7:70 till way beyond midnight, to the wee hours of the morning. The Rebbetzin would sit and wait for the Rebbe to come home after these long forbringers. And the Rebbetzin gave up a lot. We have to also appreciate the fact that it is the Rebbetzin that connects us with all the Rebbes, that the she was a daughter of the previous Rebbe. She was a princess. She was regal. She was the daughter of a Rebbe, of one of the greatest Rebbes. So she was a righteous woman, the daughter of a leader. And she had very, very special merits. But most of her life was lived in obscurity. Nobody knew. People didn't know. A lot of people, for example, never saw the Rebbetzin. That's how much she shunned being in the public eye. For example, I grew up in Crown Heights. Maybe on one or two occasions can I say that I saw the Rebbetzin over there for many, many years. Because she did not want to be in the spotlight, and she was there to protect the Rebbe. Especially, we know that the Rebbe gave her tremendous honor. After her passing, the Rebbe would forbring, and the Rebbe would speak about what a righteous woman she is. And he says these words that we have really no way of really understanding how this woman righteousness, how far it goes. The only one who really knows it is Hashem himself. Hashem knows her level of righteousness. And there are stories that, but one of the stories interesting is that they once, the women in Chabad, and by the way, so this Shabbos, they have a gathering of shluchos, just like we have the kinnus ha-shluchim, the gathering of the shluchim, the men shluchim. We have also the gathering of the women shluchos, this Shabbos in connection with Chav B'Shvat, with the yortzeit of Rabbonis HaTzidkon Nischai Mushka. So this Shabbos is done to remember it. So the women, one time, wanted to honor her on her birthday. I think it was Chav Hei Adar, yeah? It's the birthday. And they send her flowers. I guess the delivery boy or whoever was delivering over there, and they also put in notes for the women. They're asking for the Rebbe for a bracha. So the delivery boy, he didn't realize, didn't understand. So he gave the flowers and the letters with all the notes for a blessing. He gave it all to the Rebbetzin. And then he realized that he made a mistake. So he was very, very apologetic. And he said, the Rebbe happened to be in the room. He says, well, this is not for you. This is for your husband. Basically for the Rebbe. Because those were notes to ask for a blessing. So that's not for you. That's for your husband. And the Rebbe sort of smiled and said, but why? You know, she has the power to bless as well. You know, the Rebbe said, you know, no, you can basically give her the requests and the notes for blessing. You can give her as well, because she can do it as well. And we know the end of the life for the later years, things were pretty rough, because besides the Rebbe, she only had one other sister alive that lived not too far. One sister, unfortunately, perished in the Holocaust. And Yimach Shemam, by the Germans, her sister and her husband. And all she had was one sister over here. And they were very close. Her sister with her were very close. But then they started off this whole big Sephardim situation in which her nephew, her sister's son, challenged the Sephardim Chabad, the Rebbe. He caused a lot of Agmas Nefesh. And she stood up by the Rebbe's side and she fought for what was important for the Rebbe. And her opinion is what counted, and that made all the difference. And then when they came to court, actually a deposition, and the question was, what was the bottom line question? Those books, those holy books, who do they belong to? They wanted to know. This is the bottom line question. Do they belong to Chabad as an organization? Or are they personal property of her father, of the Rebbe, of the previous Rebbe? The difference is, if it belongs to organization, then it has to stay in the hands of the organization. But if the books are her father's, then the family members have rights. You know, they have to split the inheritance, so they have rights. So they asked her, in her opinion, who did it belong to, her father or to the Hasidim? And she very wisely answered that my father, together with the books, belonged to the Hasidim. So, in other words, my father wasn't a separate entity. It's not a question whether he owned the books or the Hasidim, because my father was owned by the Hasidim too. He didn't have his personal life. It was all about the movement. It was all about Chabad. And the Rebbe said, by a Fabringen, that the judge actually took those powerful words into his decision-making, in which he ruled eventually that the books belonged to the Rebbe. Now, I just want to finish with this. You know, we always try to emulate the Rebbe, you know. I mean, it's very difficult to emulate the Rebbe, the Rebbe's learning, the Rebbe's holiness. But sometimes there are things that are easier to emulate. To see the respect the Rebbe gave his wife, the honor, how he cherished and how he treated. Just the Rebbe's way of relating to other people with such selfless respect and cherish them. We should learn how to learn the same way, you know, how to treat, you know, other people, you know, to treat other people as Rashi brings down in the Chumash next week in the Parshas Mishpatim, that even the stones that you walk up to the Mizbeach, there was a ramp over there so that you don't take big steps. It's like a little degrading for the Mizbeach to walk up with big steps over it. So you make a ramp, so you go slowly. And Rashi says, well, stones don't feel and don't know, so who cares about... Yet the Torah says, can't even disrespect even inanimate things, even things like stone. They don't know anything. How much more so another human being who was created, Rashi says, in the image of God and has feelings. And if he gets insulted, he is pained by it. How much more so that we need to be careful not to even an extreme case of disrespect. Think that one of the things that we could and we should learn is just on the very simple level how to treat one another. And Hashem should help that the zechus, the merit of the Rebbetzin, Chaya Mushka, should be protecting of us, and Hashem will help us in everything that we do, and we should merit the coming of Mashiach, Meher Yomeinu.